Hey there. Welcome back. This is Crosshairs Radio, episode 31. It's been a while. Been on a little bit of a hiatus. Doing a little travel in Europe. Taking a little break from podcasts, but now we're back. Going full bore. It's time to get back into it. This episode that we have today is another one of our basement tapes. It's me and Taylor Jones and Kevin Hayes, the CX Shark and Slinger Jones in the basement. We're just talking about cyclocross, catching up on everything. So we're getting it all out there. I will mention right now before you start to listen that somehow in the time that I was away from the mixing board here in my basement, I forgot how to mix a podcast. So the levels are not where I would want them. Kevin's coming in a little soft, Taylor as well. I'm too loud. Tried to fix it a little bit, but I didn't want to like screw up the sound too much. So it is what it is. Apologize, and we'll do better next time. This episode of Crosshairs Radio is brought to you by JBV Coaching. JBV Coaching is celebrating its 11th year in business, led by John Verhuell. These guys have a passion for cyclocross, but experience in road and mountain bike as well. You may be asking, well, why do I need a coach? And that's a really good question. And it really, different people need coaching for different reasons. It's one, you know, it's a type of thing where a lot of times when you're doing a lot of training, you may think you're on the right track and you really can't see the forest for the trees, to use a cliche. Getting a good coach, getting some of these guys like JBV Coaching, they can see not only the forest, but the trees. They can do it all. They can have a bird's eye view, let you know where you want to go, you know, talk with you, work with you to make sure that you reach your goals, and also make sure that A, you're not overtraining, B, you're not undertraining, that you're right on the right, in the right mental state, and you know, maybe you have questions about nutrition. This is all kinds of things that having a coach can help you with. Personally, here's what I liked about being coached, was it was accountability. You know, even though I want to think that I am motivated and I'm going to go out there and train for whatever reason, you know, I'm the type of person that always wants to do good work for someone else. So I feel like if somebody else is going to be disappointed if I don't do the work, there is some sort of accountability there, and that's what a good coach will give you, but in a positive way. So that's personally why I like doing coaching. You may have your own reason, but it's definitely something that can give you that boost for the upcoming cyclocross season. JBV Coaching, they got 20 plus years of bike racing experience and 15 years of organizing and presenting skill clinics for road and cross and other things. Give these guys a look. JBV Coaching. What else can I tell you? Wide Angle Podium Network. That is what Crosshairs Radio is a part of. And I would ask that you go to wideanglepodium.com. Go check out all of the other shows. If you want, you can become a member. You can donate to the shows that you enjoy supporting. And that goes a long way to making us being able to do what we want to do without, you know, going too deep into our own funds. We're going to do it anyway, but you know, your support and your help makes it that much easier to make these shows a reality. And that's about all I got for you now. I am working on a pretty cool interview this week, so we should have another episode of Crosshairs Radio up next week. It's good to be back, getting stoked for cyclocross season. Only, 3 months away. So we're on our way, but yeah, let's catch up on everything going out there with Slinger and the Shark. Yeah, sounds like a morning radio show. All right, we're back with Slinger and the Shark. Oh, and as a side note, yes, I did just create a nickname for Taylor. So if you want to start calling him Slinger too, I'm sure he'll appreciate it. Let's get to the show. My question to Bill was, if you're a Belgian cross pro in the off season, do you have to race enduro, downhill, and or ride dirt bikes?
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Should we start?
Yep. Let's do it.
All right. We are in the basement. It's been a while with Taylor Jones, Kevin Hayes, Kevin Hayes for one of the final times live.
That's right.
Before he leaves us for Tennessee.
That's right, leaving for Tennessee.
Yeah.
Gonna go race, what, mud, sweat, and gears?
Mud, sweat, and gears.
That's right. That's gonna be my local series.
That'll be good. That'll be good. You'll be able to report in. Report in on that. We'll get you in on
going back on to Skype. Back to the real grassroots.
That's right.
Yeah.
Fields of, I don't know,
8 to 12.
That's right.
Yeah, but you still get some. Isn't there a C1 race at some point?
Kingsport.
Tennessee. Yeah.
That's gonna be like your hometown thing now.
I know.
Well,
does that mean you have to buy a UCI license for that?
I'm sure they'll have other races.
Yeah.
You could jump in. If you want to go do that, you could also.
I'm too young for the old guy races.
But, yeah, so we have a lot going on in the world of cyclocross. Mainly just, you know, a lot of it just, you know, transfer season type stuff. A lot of shakeups with the big teams that we haven't had an opportunity to discuss. And then also other news with some of the top riders. I think the biggest one since we last had a show was Lars Vanderhaar. You know, I think there had been speculation for months that he was going to do something. He had talked about at the end of last season that he was happy with Giant because he wanted to run his own team and, you know, be the main guy. That was sort of his big goal. But then it turned out that, you know, Marlux is after him, really interested. Sven and Telenet after him, really interested. And that's where he ends up. You know, they make an announcement. Lars Vanderhaar signing with Telenet Fidea starting January 1st, 2017. So he'll still race as a Giant rider for half of the season. It's a weird thing about cyclocross where you get these transfers that always happen in the middle of the season and everybody changes kits. But yeah, and then for 2017 on, he will be the top guy most likely at Telenet.
How, I don't remember, how long was the contract he signed? It's more than 1 year, I'm guessing.
Either two or three.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, you want to lock that down?
Yeah, and What does that do? I mean, what does that do just for Telenet to start with? You figure they weren't at the front because you had Vanderpool and Van Aert who were sort of, you know, running away with most of the races. So is Vanderhaar the answer? I'm looking at you, Kevin.
I don't know. I mean, I still don't know why he left Giant. It seemed like he has pretty strong road season with him too. And I mean, I think that's just going to hit him.
So I have a theory though. This doesn't necessarily just apply to Lars Vanderhaar, but I think it's also something that you see with, you know, Lars Boehm talking about coming back to cyclocross, which is that you can be a run of the mill roadie on a world tour team, pro tour team, and you can get paid whatever, 50,000-60,000 euros, or you can focus on cross and make more money and be the big fish in a small pond, and because you're making money not just from your salary but also from your appearance fees. And so I wonder if that's part of it too, because I mean, these guys realize that, I mean, this, you're not going to be a professional bike racer until the end of your life.
But isn't there a, you know, I mean, for a pro tour rider, isn't there a minimum
salary? It's like 40,000 euros.
Okay.
Which I mean, guys like Wout, I mean, you're making more than that just in appearance fees.
Right.
So,
but you still got to be like, yeah, one of those top guys. I'll bet, right, for, you know, somebody like Baum, for Lars, he must have signed a large contract, though.
Yeah, I suspect. Yeah. I mean, I just wonder. I'm just thinking that that's probably part of it.
I don't disagree with you, and I think it's a good exit plan, too, especially for a guy like him where he's sort of taking a shot. And he, you know, we can sort of talk about him as well because...
Yeah, sorry, I don't mean to...
No, it's fine. We can go off as many tangents as we want, but I think that, you know, when we saw the pictures of him stocking up on Dugasta tires last year, you know, 30 sets of them or whatever it was like...
32 millimeters.
Yeah, exactly, 32.
Yeah, that's like overstocks. Like, hey, this is what's left if you buy tires in November.
The bargain bin.
Yeah.
That we were all excited about him coming back to cyclocross, and he got in there, did a couple races. I think that it would have been nice to see him continue to race, because by the time the World Championship rolled around, he was, what, top 30, top 20?
Yeah, top 30. But, I think also part of it, and you saw this with Zdeněk Stybar, which is that, I mean, like, Edex Quickstep, I mean, they're paying him to race on the road. So when he says, hey, I want to do a bunch of cross races, I think all they see those, they just see those as liabilities. Like, that's an opportunity for you to crash and hurt yourself.
Which was born out.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that that's probably part of it too. Whereas if you have, I think as the sport of cycling, whether it's road or mountain or cyclocross, has become more specialized, I think that it's a lot more difficult for these riders to convince a team, hey, I want to do road and cross, or road and mountain, or mountain and cross, or whatever. I think that's just a more difficult conversation to have. I mean, and you saw it happen for a slightly different reason with Francis Morais, which was, you know, FDJ, they said, hey, we want to really ramp things up. We want to build more support for Thibaut Pinot. We want to do more training camps. We want to do altitude camps. We want to do more specialized sports nutrition training. And that money's got to come from somewhere. So we can't support you racing cyclocross anymore. So he left. So I think that that's probably part of it too.
Yeah, which is interesting too, because he would still be a factor at least a little bit on the road for them. You know, you look at the Giro, he had some good
years,
results.
He was the top finishing Frenchman in the Giro on two or three occasions. So it's true.
Yeah, so but going back just to put a pin on the Lars Boom, he had his dalliance back in cyclocross this year. I think maybe he'll do a little bit next year as well, but he's not coming back, at least not for a couple of years. There was a lot of, you know, once Sven took over Telenet Fidea, one of the guys that he was after, along with Lars Vanderhaar, who he got was Lars Boom. He wanted Big and Little Lars both on the Telenet Fidea squad, and, you know, he really wanted to sign him, and Big Lars finally said, still thinks he can do well in the classics, wants to still keep that dream alive at least for the next couple of years. But even so, 2 years down the line, you know, we've seen guys who can do just fine. Again, talking about Sven Nys, later in their careers when they get up into their late 30s and still do well in cyclocross. So I think that Big Lars still has an opportunity there once he's done with the road.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Little Lars on a Trek is going to be an interesting couple right there.
Why do you say that? Because I think one of the criticisms of him on Giant was always that they didn't make a bike small enough.
That's true. Does Trek make a bike small enough?
I think they do. I think they make a smaller version. So maybe, and it's also, it seems like it's more of a, he has support that maybe he didn't have.
Oh yeah, he'll be
from Giant.
He'll be the guy now, right?
I mean, yeah. So, you know, not to slag on him because we do it all the time, but as far as fit and positioning and, you know, coaching and direction, it looks like there's an opportunity for him to get some of that stuff that he didn't get before. I mean, you look at these YouTube videos of him giving his finger quote clinic in California from a couple years ago, where he's like, hey, get on your bike however you want. You know, that's sort of the Lars Vanderhaar way, and that's what we've always sort of criticized him for, that if he would spend that extra time on technique, maybe he would be even stronger, even a greater rider. And, you know, under Sven, under that system, maybe this is when he gets that opportunity to really fulfill all of his ability.
Prior to this, when he was on Giant, did he have any of these big name coaches?
But the funny thing is, you know, you were talking about him on the road, and then what happened today?
Oh yeah, he was the top placed Giant Alpecin rider in the Dauphiné.
Yeah, so I didn't even realize he was riding that. So he's on the road.
That was an uphill time trial. Too,
yeah.
By the way, he only got 103rd, but I mean, he's still in top place.
That's amazing. Yeah. Oh, so that's the one where all I saw was the picture of Tony Martin all bundled up and like freezing in a ski lift coming down down
went,
the hill
they went
after
from the bottom of Leger, they went to the top. So nice. It's like 4K or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So Lars Vanderhaar on Telenet starting in 2017.
I think it's a big move. And
yeah,
I will never cease to be weirded out whenever you see cycling press conferences like that and everyone's in Trek get up and a Trek backdrop and he's sitting there in a giant Alpecin t-shirt.
Right.
Yeah. It's just so bizarre.
Well, as you know, bad segues go, better that than an Abercrombie and Fitch t-shirt at a press conference, which brings us to our next topic, which was the falling dominoes of Lars Vanderhaar joining Telenet. That meant that one of the upcoming stars on that team, Ellie Easerbeat, decided that it was time for him to leave. So he was in negotiations with Telenet, you know, him and Sven. He didn't think he was getting offered the contract that he deserved as a world champion and as one of these future stars of the sport. So he made the announcement even before having a new team that he was not coming back. Later we learn that he is signed to Marlux, which was, what were they last year? Sunweb, which is now Marlux, and is going to be a force on that team. What do you guys think about that move?
I'd have a hard time leaving Telenet, especially if Sven was the coach at this point, especially if you're an up-and-coming guy. I mean, you have the guy that's going to be coaching, and I feel like you have so much to learn from a guy like that. And
so, I think there's probably another undercurrent here. I mean, I think Ridley probably was big in that because you got to think, okay, this guy, he's Belgian, he's world champ, he's going to be the next big thing for the next decade, right, at least. So we definitely want him on our bikes. So I would not surprise me if they're partly footing the bill for his salary. But I think that, I think that it's an interesting move. I mean, I think it does show that in cyclocross, despite it being a team sport to a certain extent, I mean, I don't know that he's going to have the teammates around him that, you know, he would have had if he would have been on Telenet. So
yeah.
I think that'll be interesting to see.
You know, and you also have a high pressure team with Jurgen as the boss who just
keep going back to what Jonathan Page said about his time racing with them.
Yeah.
That it was just like living and racing inside a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
And I mean, is that the right environment for a young guy? We'll see.
So here's an interesting thing. This is, you know, not my own information, but just stuff that people pass along to me that makes it even more seem more of a natural fit for him. Marlux, largely a Flandrian team, and Ellie is from Cordic, which is he's in that region, so it's more of a regional fit for him. And the fact that once, you know, another move which we'll talk about happened. And a couple other things happened on Marlux. What you're talking about with the money. One, Gianni Vermeersch, which we'll discuss, was not asked back onto that Marlux squad. And then I guess also, you know, from what I've led to understand, Klaas is not making the same money that he was in the past. So that really opened up this money that was available to sign somebody like Easerbeat. And that money was already being, you know, gather together because they made that hard push for Lars Vanderhaar. So once he was off the table, they really had to find somebody that was going to be the future of their team. You know, not to say that Kevin Powells isn't going to still have some good years, but you really have to look a couple years down the road.
So is he going to be racing U19, U23 next year?
I have to imagine he's going to jump right into Elite.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you figure U23 world champion.
Yeah,
maybe for the World Cups he'll jump back into the U23. But I can't imagine that happening, especially you know, 5 years ago that seemed to be the way it was. Everybody stayed in their age bracket, and it was actually, I think, Lars Vanderhaar who broke that mold, and he was the first one at what 19, 20 to jump into the elites, and then ever since then, you know, you have that whole youth movement that we talk about, the Vanderpoels and Van Aerts and Schwick, you know, all those guys just jumping right to the elites.
Yeah, U23 is something I think of the past. I just want to jump to big games.
Yeah, you do well in the juniors and then spend a year maybe. Well, I mean, look at Easerbeat. He only spent 1 year in the U20. He's only 20.
Right, that's why I was like, I couldn't believe that he would actually be in elites at this point. I mean, I can.
Yeah, I mean, but he jumped right in and, you know, won the U23 World Championship. Didn't Tupolek end up moving?
Adam Tupolek?
Yeah, did he sign some...
He's with Era.
Okay. I don't know.
I was looking at that today. He doesn't have a contract for 2017.
Okay.
At least not what I saw online. He's under contract with them through 2017 or through the end of 2016. But I don't know. No one on that team has a contract past 2016.
Yeah.
So,
you know, my whole take on the Easerbeat thing is I think it's not a bad thing. I think it's good. I think that, yes, I agree that staying in that system may have helped him, but as far as a fan and wanting to see people on different teams at the front, it's, you know, good to get those guys spread out and telling that. As far as youth guys go, you know, they got Quentin Hermans, they got other guys down there who still have an opportunity to move up. So,
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see. Some parity. I mean, in the end, it's going to be Van Aert and Vanderpool in the front anyway.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Everybody else chasing.
Yeah.
All right, so the story of Gianni Vermeersch.
I mean, I feel like it's an interesting story because all of the results that the guy had last year were totally clouded by, you know, some guy's cell phone video of him getting bitched out by Sven.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
And others.
And, yeah, I mean, like, that's... Your entire season is now in, like, a five-second video of you being told not to race like an idiot.
Well, I mean...
So...
You know, we can even start it at Cross Vegas where our...
He was making some friends, huh?
Our buddy Ryan Trevone, who is not one to, you know, hold back on... pointing out anybody definitely had some choice words for the way that Vermeersch raced. So I think that if anything, it validated what Ryan was saying from the first World Cup about maybe Vermeersch's aggressive style.
Well put.
Yeah.
Very well put.
So anyway, he was let go by Marlux. This is the interesting part. He was signed by the Rudolph brothers. These are the guys who own not only the Beobank team of Matthew Vanderpool, but also the Era team of Lauren Sweet. They end up picking up Vermeersch. Don't put him on either of those two squads. So for a while there, we're all in limbo of what he's actually going to do. It comes out that they're starting this third team.
These guys have three teams now.
They now own three teams.
Well, because the whole idea with the Era Murpatech team is that the whatever Beobank Corridon,
yeah,
that's like the team for the Belgians and the Dutch, and that the Era team is for the like other Europeans.
Oh, okay,
like that,
right.
I mean, that like
the Swiss,
the Czech riders,
yeah.
the Polish guys,
right?
I mean, that's my understanding of it.
Yeah,
it's like this is the team for the Belgians. This is the team for you other folks.
Right, because that's
more keep the sponsors happy. Like
maybe I mean yeah, different. Yeah, I mean maybe it's easier to attract sponsors because it's like, hey, if you're a sponsor, if you're a company that operates in these markets, these are the riders that we're going to sign, and they'll be racing. You know, they'll do whatever, some toy cup races if
right.
you want to make people in the Czech Republic happy. I don't know.
Is who's the Czech rider that was on there
right now? The only rider they have is Adam Tupolek.
Okay, so he's the only one. Who are the other two guys? Why am I blanking?
Simonek?
Yeah, Simonek, and then
he might be. Let me pull up the roster.
Yeah,
sure he was.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
you might be right.
But the other interesting thing about
Boros.
Yeah, yeah, right. The other interesting thing about this new Stalarts team is that the boss of this team, there were rumors that Bart Wellens was making this comeback, which seemed ludicrous after seeing Bart Wellens showing up in the
World Champ kit and making
that laugh. Yeah, in the veterans race where he did not look like he was in very good shape.
I never thought about this until right now. He probably could have had a really good time in the donut race in Asheville.
Oh, he would have he would have crushed. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that would have been a good one. So, so Wellens is in the news about making this comeback or not really know what's going on. It ends up that he was tapped as the new manager of the Stalarts team. So Wellens will be heading up the team that I guess the biggest name right now is Gianni Vermeersch.
So I'm curious what these guys have as managerial duties at this point. Are they like actually taking on the whole manager duty, or are they kind of a figure on top of it that's kind of leading the team and telling them what to do? Or I don't know. I just don't know what when these racers come back after a while, if they really have.
Well, it seems like everyone has their own coach.
Right, yeah.
So it's not that. I think it's more like, yeah, just team strategy. It seems, I mean, as far... It's hard to say because, like with Sven, he's a team owner also. So, you know, he's got the checkbook. He's got everything else that he's doing with his team. Niels Dauber looks like he's, like, leading the strategy of the team, sort of.
He always looks serious on the side of the course.
He does look serious. They yell at people in the pits.
Yeah.
As they roll by. That's a good question. We'll have to dive back in, dive more into what the team manager actually does.
I mean, I don't wonder if part of it is, you know, dealing with the sponsors.
Oh, I'm sure that's a huge part of it. And that's probably why, I mean, look at the guys who are your biggest, other than Jürgen, your biggest guys are these, you know, huge names in the sport. Niels Albert, Sven Nys, Bart Wellens. Those are
that's how you get sponsors. It's
right.
Like, hey, this is the team that's run by Bart Wellens.
Right.
So people in Belgium, they know Bart Wellens. End of the name.
Yeah. All right. Well, those are the biggest, I think, transfer stories out there. One sort of moving over to the road for a minute, one thing that I did want to talk about, because there's always these rumors, you know, especially with Matthew Vanderpool, I guess, being the biggest one, especially after how he was treated in the World Championships, getting beers thrown at him, all that kind of stuff. The first thing that Audrey Vanderpool, his dad, said was, well, maybe he'd be better off on the road, you know, as sort of the, if this is the way you're going to disrespect him, we'll just go race the road. And that's always been the rumor that eventually Matthew Vanderpool and his, you know, pedigree would end up on the road, at least.
Yeah,
for these.
He hasn't been on the road at all this season, right? I mean,
that's the thing. He hasn't been there.
Yeah.
The one guy, and this leads me to the one guy who you thought was always going to be the cyclocross king, and why one, he's the current world championship. He's basically stepped right into Sven's shoes and taken over as the king of cyclocross is Wout van Aert. He shows up at Paris-Roubaix, just sort of hanging out, checking it out. He's at the Ronde, same thing. All of a sudden, he's like, hey, this is something I'd really like to do. You know, race some of these classics. Thinks it'd be fun. And then he gets out on the road.
Turns out he's a stage racer.
And he's killing it.
Yeah.
Makes sense, because you figure the short, hard efforts required, like when he decides in a cross race that, like, now, like, this is the time that I'm going to win the race. I mean, that translates perfectly into, you know, like the prologue at the Tour of Belgium.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going, 10-minute effort.
And not going up against nobodies. You know, going up against
right.
Tony Martin. Going up against these big names and taking it.
Yep. Yeah.
Of course, didn't do as well the following stages.
So how did that turn out in the end? I mean, outside win the prologue, which,
he won the prologue. He lost the leader jersey on stage one,
mm-hmm.
and then to cap the week off, he was taken down in a crash in the last turn on the last day on the last stage by a guy who overshot a turn and couldn't brake because it was pouring rain. So I think that pretty much summed up his week.
Yeah.
Man.
But he did then bounce back, and just today in one of the Kermesses behind the journey in Girona, he ends up winning the race, 85-kilometer race, out sprinting Lars Boom and Sepp van Marck to take the win. So some good road showings for Wout van Aert. Also notable, Kevin Powell's fifth in that race.
Yeah,
Tom Mason ninth, and Lauren Swick was 10th.
The thing that I always keep coming back to when you talk about cyclocrossers racing on the road is the photo of Stibar when he's in a road race and he's like off to the side, dismounting off his bike, cyclocross style, while the peloton is riding. That's what I always come back to in my mind.
I can tell you about this race today. Hour 53 racing, average speed 45 kilometers an hour. It's a pretty good pace.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
All right. So, yeah. So I guess the question then is, what are we going to see from Wout? And you have to think that he stays in cyclocross. But at a certain point, if he's looking at these other monuments, what else does he have to prove in the sport? He's won the Belgian National Championship. Mm-hmm. He's won the World Championship. He's won every series.
You know,
Super Prestige.
One those the Red Bull Urban Castle cyclocross thing in Switzerland.
Okay, so there's that.
Well, so when he did Paris-Roubaix, he said that was like really hard, right? I mean,
he didn't do it.
He was just hanging out.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah, that was Lars van der Haar. Yeah, said it was pretty much the hardest thing he did. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, even on the recon day, Lars went out with the team on the recon day, and he was like, "Whoa, that was much tougher than I thought it'd be."
Yeah.
But
I wonder if he does. I mean, I guess that we get some indication of it if he started, like if he did come up to a team, a big pro road team.
Yeah.
And if he had a big sponsor change somewhere along the way, I think that might be some indication at some point.
Yeah, I also wonder. I mean, I guess especially for Flanders, you have to think all the Kralen guys race on the road.
Yep.
They pretty much put a full road squad out and a lot of these.
I mean, yeah, they have a full continental road team that's not cyclocross guys.
So you would think for something like Flanders, they would get a wild card invite.
Well, they can't. They're not pro continental.
Oh, really?
They're
okay.
Continental.
So he would have to be like a guest rider for somebody.
I don't think you can do that.
Can't do that either. So he'd have to change teams
right,
to.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, he'd have to go up to pro continental level.
Can you do that?
Well, okay. Actually, I don't know that you can't guest ride. That's not true. Because remember last year that Nino Schurter rode either Tour of Romandy or Tour de Suisse with Orica Green Edge?
Did he really?
Because he's sponsored by Scott, and so are they. So I don't know how he got dispensation to ride just that race with them. So it might be possible.
Who's a Canalgo road team?
Oof. They don't have anybody anymore. Because they don't sponsor your. Well, now it's Direct Energy. Those guys ride BH.
So maybe you can. Yeah, okay. All right.
Russ Velo.
Yeah.
Gazprom, whatever the
yeah.
team. That, now
okay.
they ride Colnago.
All right.
So he could be the first non-Russian on that team.
Perfect.
Let's get that working.
All right. Well, I'm sure somebody on Twitter will be able to set us straight on how that will be possible. And
I just kind of see him stuck in this spot right now if he does want to progress anywhere in his road career. So
yeah. You figure he has to go defend. And maybe if he doesn't get the, I don't know. Who knows? What is he, like 20? 21? Is he 21 yet?
Is he?
He's young. He's very young.
The other great thing about, I think I might have mentioned this on an earlier podcast, but the thing that just always amazes me with him is how he was riding away from everyone this year, and then he went into whatever institute in Belgium to do all of his, post-season power tests and everything, VO2 max, and just like heads and shoulders above what he was last year. So he's already like improved on what he was killing everybody with, and he's already like stacked stuff on top of that.
So. Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, I think the one, I don't know, one thing to think about, is especially for these guys who are much younger, is that over the course of, what is conceivably going to be their career the next 10, 12, 15 years, maybe cyclocross will be an Olympic sport at some point. So maybe that's another thing for these guys to shoot for. Who knows?
Yeah. Good segue. Let's talk about the Olympics.
Okay.
So Matthew Van Der Poel, who we were talking about.
I didn't mean to do this, by the way.
Oh, no. I was jumping on the opportunity.
Good.
who we thought would be racing the road, ended up pretty much the day after the World Championship. It was like the next day, or at least 2 days later, on his Instagram, on a mountain bike, on the trails, tearing it up. Soon after that, announces that he's going to be doing a full mountain bike schedule, looking for a spot on the Dutch Olympic team. And, you know, is showing up at World Cup races.
Oh, I mean, he was in, like, all winter. He was, like, in Cyprus training.
Yeah.
You know, training, doing those early season Sunshine Cup races in Cyprus. Like, yeah. He won one of those races, I believe.
Right. Yeah, well, that was the thing. He shows up, you know, and has these great, you know, smaller races, shows up, wins this mountain bike race. Everybody's like, uh-oh. You know, goes down to Cannes for the first cross-country World Cup. Little bit, you know, that was a race that everybody was flatting, and he was not immune to that as well. I think he may have crashed as well, but still ended up in the 30s, you know, which a decent result for that race. So it really looked like, oh, geez, this guy's going to be, you know, moving up the ranks for cross-country mountain biking. Got to the second and third rounds in Alpstadt and La Bresse. Really not the case. You know, really fell off the pace. I was able to see him in his practice rounds and also racing in those races. And there's definitely a difference between guys who do it all the time and guys like him trying to step in there when it comes to those more technical courses. So
he wasn't just ripping it like he was on a cross bike. I mean,
he did some, like, especially in Alpstadt, he did just this crazy stuff. I think I have an Instagram video of him where he's tripoding down the down the descent. Crazy steep descent after having to stop because a guy crashed in front of him. You know, and that kind of stuff he's always going to be able to do. But I think just from a sense of flow, it wasn't really. It's not the same. It's not the same as seeing, like, Nino come down there. You know, and it's just a completely different pace.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing that's worth mentioning is, you know, his spot on the starting grids, he's like 99th on the start grid. So even on these races where he's finishing like in the 40s, I mean, he's passing like almost 60 people.
And you know, cross-country mountain biking, a lot like cyclocross, the sprint's at the beginning. You know, and it's especially with these last two rounds of the World Cup, is like if you got stuck back there. You know, and I think, Taylor, you had mentioned that from just watching the coverage, is that you could see guys three-quarters of the way up the six-minute climb, and you could see other guys still, like,
on the start straight.
Yeah, basically on the start straight, not even there yet. So it was, like, race over for those guys, you know, and you hadn't even started yet.
Yeah, I was trying to look at the results to see where he finished in La Bresse, and he's not on the first page, which goes to 53rd. So
Yeah, I think he was definitely down there.
And to answer Kevin's question before we started recording, I think the two guys who are probably going to, I assume that Holland has two spots. It's probably going to be Rudy Van Houts, and then the other Michael van der Heijden. He's actually a teammate of Nino Schurter, so I suspect it'll be those two guys. I mean, I think Rudy Van Houts might have gone to the Olympics the last couple times. I mean, he's always pretty much been the top Dutch mountain biker since Bart Brunchens retired, as far as I can recall. But
Yeah, so maybe the cross doesn't translate quite over to mountain biking as nicely as we hope for these guys.
Yeah, and it's also something that I've talked about in the past, is that I don't think that's a bad thing, because it means it's the same thing with Lars Boom coming back to cyclocross and not doing as well as he had done in the past. It's the same thing as Vanderpool going to cross country, you know, mountain biking. You want to think that these professionals at the top end of their sport actually have some sort of specialty in their sport and can do it, since that is what they work on. They can do it better than anybody stepping in there. So it actually makes me a little happy that the guys that this is their career, this is their profession, are still beating the guys who are, like, extremely talented cyclists but can't just, you know, move over and do that.
The PFPs might be less and less thing.
Yeah, I think the women's game is a different argument, because they are all multidisciplined racers. You know, and that's, you know, we've talked about that in the past, be it because of they have to do it for money reasons, that they can't, you know, have a full-time career in one discipline, that they have to be good at more than one thing.
Yeah.
That being said, she didn't have a hot race.
She did not look good.
No.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was going to say, I mean, if we want to talk about some of the women, too, I mean, talk about Marianne Vos. I mean, that was someone that last season, you know, she didn't really do too much. But then she came back this year, and straight away, I think it was like her second race of the season in March, she won.
Yeah, didn't she just win yesterday?
She won.
Or today?
Today.
Today.
She won race today. She was at did the Women's Tour of California.
Yeah, on the road, yeah.
Fourth overall, second overall in the points classification. So, you know, I think those are promising signs for her coming back.
Yeah.
To cyclocross this fall, hopefully.
I think that PFP also will be back as well. I think she's still, you know, cracked her knee in half. I think she's probably needs a little more recovery time. But going back to your point, Kevin, and maybe going against my explanation, I hope you're right. I hope, you know, people like Yoan and Neff and racers like that who are able to just race mountain bike or just race cyclocross are the future for women's sport. I think that's going to make it a stronger sport all around. If it means that they can get the support to do it, that's a good thing. I think if it's, you know, if it's harder for somebody to go from sport to sport to sport, I think that's good.
Yeah. I mean, I think for Yolanda Neff, I mean, she might be in a slightly different example because, I mean, one of the big pieces of news last year was in Switzerland, they basically canceled all the funding for the women's national team. So mountain biking is getting a lot of money in Switzerland, whereas road cycling for women is getting nothing.
Okay.
She also rode Worlds last year in Richmond. She placed like top 10 still in the Worlds last year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she's still, I mean, we're still multidisciplinary. Like
right.
So,
right.
I mean, all these women there are all over the place.
She's a good one, man.
I enjoy watching her ride, man.
And she came in, to La Bresse saying she was sick and not 100%.
I think she said she was 93%. Like,
well, what I will say, and I know I'm talking about a lot of mountain biking because I did have the opportunity to go and work at the last two World Cup stops, is that if you like cyclocross, especially in the past, was it like 3 years now when they basically changed cross country mountain biking?
Yep.
Yeah. So it used to be that they were these long 3-4 hour races and you didn't see it. You couldn't watch it. It was 1-2 laps of these super long courses and it was gone. It has now become more and more like cyclocross.
It's
where
like a slightly longer cyclocross race.
Yeah, so you're getting, I think...
You're racing for like 60 to 90 minutes.
Right, so the women did 5 laps, the men did 6 laps at La Bresse. It was a technical course. It's the type of thing that is just like what we love about cyclocross. It's made for TV.
And they have cameras everywhere.
And you don't have to mess around on the internet to try and figure out where to watch it because you can go Red Bull TV and you can watch it now live. You can watch it tomorrow. You can watch it 2 years from now, whatever. It's it's online. It's on demand. It's not, doesn't cost you anything.
I mean, I might even buy a Red Bull just because of its coverage.
Yeah.
It's so good. Like,
but are you going to drink it?
No, it's
because. Exactly. That's
the Taylor Jones theory, which I set out to prove and still have been unable to. That
I challenge you to disprove it.
None of the I can tell. Well, I should. I've yet to see a Red Bull ad.
Photographic evidence. Evidence.
And it's not even. So what we're saying is that we've never seen a Red Bull endurance athlete. Red Bull endurance athlete actually drink a Red Bull. We've seen them hold them.
Yes,
but it's can to lips.
An act.
Can to lips.
I
want to
see him open a new can too. Not like
and then measure it and make sure that it's not still like, you know, something's got to go down your throat.
Yeah, but that's
my theory.
That is my plea for you all. If you haven't already, go to redbulltv.com. Check out, you don't need
Redbull.tv.
Redbull.tv, that's it, Redbull.tv. You don't have to, you know, have a VPN or anything like that. Go watch some of those cross-country. The downhill races are awesome to watch. That's a completely different thing. But I'm saying if you like cyclocross, go check out those World Cup races as well because I think you'll get a kick out of them.
Yeah, you'll see a lot of familiar names too. I mean, there's a lot of North American riders who, you know, people that you've had on the show before, Bill. You know, you've got folks who will show up and do a full
Yeah, no, it was great seeing Georgia Gold out there. It was great seeing Rafe Gagne out there.
Yeah.
You know, it was really cool to see a lot of these North Americans who are there. Jeff Kubush was out there racing. You know, it's good to see these names that you see show up at cyclocross races out there racing their mountain bikes as well.
Yeah. Speaking of Red Bull,
yes,
mountain biking and cyclocross. You saw Simon Andreasen.
I did. I saw Simon Andreasen out there.
He was like top five in both of the weekends you were there. Is that right?
Yeah, he was. Okay. He was happy with his results. I was mentioning
this is in the U23 race. By
the way. U23 men's U23 race. I was mentioning these guys before we started recording. I was surprised that he was much smaller than I imagined. He looks much bigger in his Instagram feed. racing at these races, a good cyclocross tie-in, and can't leave out here. Tom Mason was there. I actually had an opportunity to talk to him. Nicest guy you will ever meet, Tom Mason. He showed up, wasn't sure he was racing. He just showed up, and him and Quentin Hermans, who raced the U23 men's race in Opstalt, both showed up. You know, I was at the Trek tent, they showed up, you know, got some new tires.
So are they racing Treks now? Were they on Trek mountain bikes?
They were on Trek mountain bikes.
Okay.
And they, Mason actually ended up forgetting his bib shorts and ended up borrowing Matt Opperman, the head mechanic for Trek Factory Racing's shorts, went out there and did a couple practice laps in his Telenet.
Absolutely love this. So they're not even sure they're racing the World Cup. They just I'll just show up to the World Cup.
Well, I think they were. I wasn't sure, but it turns out that they were all signed up and ready to go.
Oh,
Mason,
it's all hard to show up to the World Cup.
I swear to God, believe me, there were people there who were just poaching the course.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, and
on, like, open course days.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's got to be terrifying though for the pros, because it's like, you know, you're going to tackle some nasty rock drop and all of a sudden there's some amateur right ahead of you and they just stack it.
Worse than that, we were talking about managers before, our team coaches. Some are fine. Some are just sort of go to the hard parts and they don't ride, or they just ride up there and they stand up on the side. Others ride the course and then they'll stop, and then they'll have their whole team stop in the course, and then you'll see just this line of pros just backed up for 5 minutes.
And
like
probably also
every
stopped at like the really technical sections.
Exactly.
Where you want speed.
And every, well, yeah. And that's what, that's what people like top pros were crashing because, you know, I was talking to one guy and he was like, yeah, cause you know, you're sitting there like waiting queued up for 3 minutes before you get to do the feature. And then by the time you go, you're starting from nothing and you have no momentum. And then all of a sudden you're thinking about it. You know, you got to start, you got to get your momentum up, and then you drop in. He's like, you can't do it like that. You can't just, you know.
And there's a lot more people in these races, too. So I got to imagine on the warm-up days. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's a great crowd. I mean, there's
yeah.
What, like 120 people in some of these races.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, again, like what Bill said, it's much like cyclocross, that the race is won or lost at the beginning on the start straight. Because, yeah, the number of people, I mean, you look at a, you know, B-post race or a world, you know, cyclocross World Cup or Super Prestige, you know, those elite fields have 30, 40 guys. But UCI Mountain Bike World Cups, yeah, you're talking over 100 people on the start grid. So,
oh, yeah. And I mean,
it's insane.
When you're in the middle of that, somebody's always getting their bars tangled
yeah.
up too. So, I mean, there's always going to be somebody going down that
yeah.
stretch straight. So.
But I think it's interesting because even though the cyclocross fields are smaller, I think at least here in the U.S., you know, you still have kind of the same internal games happening that you have at the mountain bike World Cups, whereas it's like, hey, I may not be winning, but I need to be top 30, top 40. I need to beat these other guys or other women from my country if I want to qualify for the Olympics, or if I want to be on the national team, or I want to be in the top 50 in the world or whatever. It's still the same kind of dynamics happening there. There's races within the race.
Oh, yeah. And that's these last two rounds of the World Cup, especially with the Olympics coming up and a lot of the countries not sure who was on their squads. And a lot of the countries, you have, you know, France and Spain and these huge, you know, these teams that have five guys at the top. Switzerland, what was Switzerland? They came in like upshot like 6th through 10th.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all racing each other because they all want to be on that Olympic team, and it was just like pressure cooker.
I don't want to be the guy to make that decision.
Oh, yeah. And you know, you figure you know one guy who's going. And then after that, it's a toss up. Yeah. So that was, you know, and that was the thing. And, you know, going back to how we started this conversation with Vanderpool, probably not making the Olympic team, just sort of thrown in the towel.
Yeah. Based on what I have seen him post on social media, it sounds like he's pretty much resigned to the fact that he's not going to qualify. So I don't know if that means he's going to not do any more mountain bike races this summer, but it sounds like he's, you know, pretty much resigned to the fact that he's not going to go.
Yeah, and, you know, the other interesting news there was, like, there's this whole controversy over Peter Sagan, how he doesn't think the Rio road race is something that really sets up for him well, so they're trying to do some dispensation where he's able to race the mountain bike race instead.
Well, and also, who else this week said they were going to try the same thing as Tom Skuins from Cannondale, from Latvia.
Oh, really?
They don't even have a spot, do they? No, so today he was at the European Marathon Mountain Bike Championships trying to get a spot on the mountain bike team for Latvia for the Olympics. So Olympic years are crazy because it's all, you know, I think you and I were talking about this the other day, Bill, that it's like, you know, some countries you have X number of spots and you can spread them around different cycling disciplines. So, you know, at this point, you know, cyclocross is somewhat immune to it, but you have these cyclocross athletes who are, like Matthew Vanderpool, still trying to find their way into the Olympics somehow.
Yeah. So are any cyclocross athletes making it to the Olympics? I mean, from any countries, do we know, have we heard of anyone that's like, oh, these riders? I haven't really heard of anyone aside from Vanderpool trying, so...
I mean, at that, I think for the women, you'd probably find people who were racing it, but I think that's a different thing. But as far as just straight up, I'm not sure.
I'm not aware of any either. I mean, you know, for years, Sven went. He raced. Mm-hmm. He represented Belgium for, I think, at least on one or two.
You know, I mean, even somebody like Fontana is I'm assuming he'll make the team, but he's going to be, you know, he's a mountain biker first.
Right. Yeah. Occasional cyclocrosser these days.
Yeah. I mean, he's wearing bibs now, so.
Was he?
Yeah, no. I'm pretty sure, yeah, no baggies.
Mm.
Yeah.
Rough. But the Germans on Cannondale, they were rocking the baggies.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. We're probably boring all these people who don't care anything about mountain bike racing.
Oh, well.
Yeah, all
come for the cyclocross, stay for the mountain bike.
They ride jubilers in cross country now. I mean, so
that's true.
Yeah, they flat them too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Mason, to go back to his practice shorts, he did end up returning them before getting them washed. So that was that was sort of the punchline to the to that warm up story. But I did.
But he's a really nice guy.
Yeah, he is, and I got an opportunity to talk to him. I have a short video interview that I'll get up eventually with him. A truly, you know, nicest guy you talked to. Basically, said he was showing up for the mountain bike racing because it's more fun than training on the road. You know,
that's why you see all these guys like Jan Denuelare racing enduro and downhill in the summer.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and he's. You know, he seems like he's pretty psyched for the change. You know, it was a question whether he would be one who would leave once Sven took over the team, but it looks like he's, at least for now, sticking around. Sven Van Tornout actually just signed on as Mason's coach, and he, is...
So he's going to have a separate coach then for, like, from the rest of the night.
I think that's it. You know, just as far as nutrition and training plans and all that kind of thing, I think all these guys still have their own individual coaches. Yeah. And then sort of as far as what you're doing for the team, that's, you know, and team camps and all that kind of stuff. It definitely blends together, but they have separate coaches as well.
Sven and Sven,
they look like they're enjoying themselves riding around in the team car in Mallorca while everybody else rides up mountains. So, and as I said, Quentin Herman's also there. Also, good guy. It was good to talk to both of them. What else we got? Oh, I did want to mention going back to the Tour of Belgium. You know, quickly, that on the final day of that, which was in Tremelo, they gave Sven and Niels Albert, honorary citizens of the city. It was this nice, you know, ceremony that they had for them. The most notable part of this is when they were both on stage and just seeing the pictures is that Niels Albert, who looked like he had been enjoying the retired life a little, you know, pretty well, looks pretty fit. Looks like he's lost a ton of weight, and yeah, looks like he's ready to race again.
That's good.
That is really good. I got a couple other, you know, Euro cross slash road things I could.
Yeah, definitely. Let's,
if we wanted to.
Absolutely.
You know, we just had, well, the Tour of Luxembourg just finished today, and the prologue was won by Jumpy Drucker of.
Oh, nice. Okay.
BMC.
Yeah.
Cyclocrosser. More so. I don't know that he's racing that much these days, but I mean, that was really kind of where he got his name.
So what we're learning is that cyclocrossers can time trial.
For short, like sprinters, you know, it's like an 8-10 minute
really
effort.
Hard for a short
note. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But,
That
was a good...
Because wasn't it, I mean, going back to Moret in the Giro, didn't he win like an uphill time trial a couple years ago? Or at least he was like in the top three or something.
Yeah, he was up there, that's for sure. And then also in the Tour of Luxembourg, you know, it was stage 3, I think it was. It was won by Anthony Turgis of Cofidis, of the Turgis family. Like, they're probably his younger brothers, probably one of Tanguy Turgis is like one of the top U23 French cyclocross riders out there. That's a big cycling family in France. So that's, you know, there's some overlap there as well.
Cool.
So.
All right.
Other cool stuff going on.
Yeah. I think last thing we had here, you know, moving from mountain biking to the gravel.
Grinding the gravel.
Dirty Kanza was yesterday. Most notable, friend of the show, Amanda Naumann, taking the win for the second year in a row, pretty much crushing the women's field in that race. It looked like it was dreadful out there. Lots of horror stories from people.
It was very hot.
Yeah, extreme heat. Lots of people dropping on the side of the road for that one. So congratulations to Amanda. And then her counterpart on the men's side taking the win, Ted King.
Finally, he's been at that Cannondale slate.
To say that he won would be... let's just say that the second place male rider was 40 minutes behind.
Yeah,
him.
So he showered 8.
Yeah. Yeah, he was waiting for a long
his feet
time
up.
For that podium photo. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, right. That's exactly what you want after that long day in the saddle, more chamois time.
Right.
Right.
All right. Anything else we want to talk about?
I do have one thing I want to talk about.
All right, let's do
to
it.
Bring it to go on another Euro roadie, but also local personal friend of all of ours, Joe Dombrowski.
Yes.
Give a big shout out to Joe because he had a fantastic Giro.
Right.
Really, really good results.
Mm-hmm.
So just want to give him a shout out because I think that he did.
Proved he can be a Grand Tour GC threat.
Yeah. I mean, stronger in the third week than he was in the first, and that's exactly what you need.
So. I raced him last year at Cap Girls.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
He started behind me, actually. I had better call than he did, so he passed me.
You see, you can legitimately say you raced with him along with every Cat 4 in the Mid-Atlantic Bicycle Racing Association, who also claims to have raced against him that one year that he raced maybe, one Cat 4 race.
Yeah. Yeah.
But hey, mountain biker. Started as a mountain biker.
Then he was a
then cyclocross. And now.
Now he's a roadie.
So it's good. Good training.
But,
all right.
What was it? I don't know. See what. I was trying to find the results. They had the Asheville Summer Sports Festival down in North Carolina. And I guess they had a cross race down there. I was trying to find the results, but I was unsuccessful. So summer cyclocross.
Yeah, right.
Never ends, I guess.
Yeah.
Hot and hard.
I saw photos of a very long sand pit. So
here, let me Let me check the countdown here quickly.
How many days to Cross Vegas?
That's it. Let's see. It is slow internet. 107 days, 22 hours, and 18 minutes until Cross Vegas.
So we got, what's that, you know, 3.5 months? 3 months?
Yeah. If you want to plan out your schedules, here's what I would recommend. You can do the math on this. No confirmation of it, but you all can do the math. There is a team in Europe that just changed over to Trek bikes. There is a race put on by Trek days before Cross Vegas. I would wager, if you wanted to see some of the top Europeans, you may want to go to Wisconsin first. So you go Wisconsin, Las Vegas, Iowa, and then just hit your local cross.
And so those guys are going to get a full tour of, like, America.
Yeah.
Like, America, right, America. They're going to spend a lot of time in the Midwest.
Yeah. If you don't do that...
I want to see photos
if you don't
of
do that,
and eating squeaky cheese.
Or if you can't do that, just go to Nittany Lion Cross instead and stay on the East Coast.
Yeah.
That's the alternative.
Exactly.
But that may be, yeah, there may be a lot of Euro pros hanging out in the U.S. for those first couple weeks.
I like that. That's going to be exciting.
Yeah, and then don't forget that in the East Coast, Mid-Atlantic, you got Charm City. This is C1 this year.
Huge deal there. Deal. Really, really excited for that race. So we get to finally see all of the big guns come to Baltimore. It's been a lot of... Man, that sounds bad. they're already there.
Yeah,
we need another. We need another way of putting that. All of the stars going to Baltimore for Charm City. Yeah, no, really looking forward to that.
I'm
going to
get photos of those guys eating soft shell crabs coated in Old Bay and send them to Kevin so he'll be homesick.
Perfect. And Kevin's got to come out. He's got to take some leave.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Because that's exactly what I'm going to have starting to
leave.
Fine. Well, if anything, DCCX, you have to make that happen. All right,
sure. Sounds good. I got a course crossing with your name on it.
Outstanding. All right, guys, thanks so much, and thank all of you for tuning in. And should be back soon with the next episode of Crosshairs Radio. See you then.
Thanks.